Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome to the special holiday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Over the final days here of 2010, Jim and I are going over the biggest political issues in McLaughlin style, giving out awards for best, worst, strangest, all sorts of different things. And Jim, today we are looking at a couple of different categories as always. First of all, the best political idea of 2010.
It's interesting you put the preface of political, because I'm going to list the best idea, and then I'll give you the political ramifications and impacts of it. The best idea of 2010 was, I can summarize in two words: static kill, as in the method that they used to shut down the oil leak in the Gulf. And the reason I said, when I was writing the Morning Jolt newsletter for NRO, and I still will continue, but during that time, I just had this feeling that, it was a huge story, and then you started seeing it slipping to page A2, A3, and further back into the newspaper. And I had this feeling that eventually the media was going to get bored with this story, even though it was still a terrible crisis to everybody who lived down there in the Gulf, and terrible for the fishermen, terrible for the people who made their livings based on tourism down on the beaches, et cetera, already hard hit Gulf Coast states. And so my attitude was, one item per day in the Morning Jolt was going to be about the Gulf spill until it was fixed. And it was going to become like Nightline with the Iranian hostage crisis. And then five verstunken months later, after days in which there wasn't much to say other than they're still working on it. But, so 5 months later, it finally does come to an end thanks to Static Kill, which has a pretty darn significant political impact, because this is what really drove Barack Obama's job approval numbers underwater, no pun intended, because it completely, while this spill kept going on and on and on week after week, he came to office with this idea of, he's a very smart guy, he's very competent, he's going to be this great manager. You won't have any of these, Bush-style Katrina mess-ups. You're going to have a good, effective government under him. And, lo and behold, in response to the oil spill, you've got the Coast Guard inspecting the life preservers on skimmers before they can get out there, and Bobby Jindal's howling his head off, and everybody around there is just sitting there waiting for the federal government to swing into action, and watching this sluggish, bureaucratic, red tape laden response that is leaving more and more miles of coastline getting damaged by this. So very damaging to President Obama. When he finally goes to speak to the nation about it from the Oval Office, he does such a terrible job invoking Stephen Chu's Nobel Prize for the 8 millionth time. He kept people wondering, is he going to stick the Nobel down there in the hole? And is that what's going to finally go in? Even Howard Feynman and Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews were just, saying this was the worst, a terrible speech. So, Static Kill, one, saved the Gulf of Mexico, or at least saved further miles of coastline from having a serious disastrous environmental impact. But furthermore, I think you could argue that either if it didn't save Obama's presidency, it saved him from hitting an even lower depth. Once again, no pun intended, because it was just such this constant reminder of this guy isn't the problem solver that he said he was. So for a conservative, seeing Obama get out of a bad situation is not necessarily the greatest thing, but the Gulf has suffered enough. And so I'm willing to say it's Static Kill. Ended up being the one legitimate time we could say, hey, a really serious problem got solved. Way to go, guys.
Absolutely. I will keep it more political, and obviously the Tea Party didn't start in 2010, but one of the ramifications of it did, and that was that those who were fed up with what was happening in Washington didn't just limit it to the party in power. You saw serious primary challenges, and some of them very successful, against longtime entrenched Republican politicians, many of whom were part of the problem. You got Bob Bennett out, Bob Inglis, who wasn't necessarily bad, but he voted for the bailout, and that was enough to get him out of office in a primary in South Carolina. And for the most part, seats weren't lost over it. You probably lost a pickup in Delaware in the Senate seat over that. But the fact that there was going to be an adherence to what was supposedly right, as opposed to keeping the status quo within the own party, I think was a really good idea for those who were fired up about what was happening in Washington.
It's another good pick, Greg.
All right, on to the worst idea now. And given the Congress we dealt with this year and the presidency, again, no shortage of options. Jim, what'd you pick?
Yeah, I mean, I could have gone with Obamacare. I could have gone with Obama's outreach to the world. I could have gone with the stimulus. I could have gone. I'm going to go with a funny one to kind of lighten our spirits as the year wraps up. You could argue that electing Eric Massa is one of the worst ideas, but that technically occurred back in 2008. But when Eric Massa, a congressman from New York, suddenly resigned after the allegations of the tickle parties and other really bizarre behavior in his congressional office, he went on Glenn Beck, and he seemed to be indicating he was ready to spill his guts about a, you know, Rahm Emanuel shower showdowns and arm twisting and bribery and corruption on the Obama administration. Glenn Beck gets the exclusive, and after 1 hour of probably one of the weirdest interviews in recent history, I salute Glenn Beck for turning to the camera and saying, America, I think I may have just wasted your time. And so the fact that Massa really couldn't back up any of the hints and allegations that he had been, you know, suggesting, and that I get the feeling that before – you get the feeling that the pre-interview and the actual on-camera interview went very differently for Glenn Beck and his producers. So I think just whenever you see a host turn around and say, you know what, America, never mind. Sorry to take up your time like this. It means generally it was a terrible idea, and I salute Glenn Beck for kind of saying, all right, you know, that did not work out the way I expected it to.
Yeah, no kidding. I will go a little more serious on this. It's one that we've laughed about in the past, and that's Demon Pass. The House Democrats deciding that things look so dicey on passing the Senate version of the health care bill with the Cornhusker kickback, the Louisiana Purchase, and who still knows what else was in there. They wanted to not even vote on the Senate bill, but only vote on the fixes to the Senate bill and just assume that by approving the fixes, that means they approved the Senate bill as it was in addition to the fixes. So clearly they eventually abandoned that, went to a vote that unfortunately passed. But the fact that they even thought they could go there just showed a political tone deafness that even surprises me from Nancy Pelosi. On to the final topic for today, and that's the boldest tactic of 2010. This could be on the campaign trail, could be legislatively. Jim, what'd you pick?
Finally, I got a little more serious with this one, and I think I stand by this as head and shoulders. I'll see what you made for your pick. Sarah Palin's primary endorsements. You know, she made picks in a whole bunch of primaries. By no means were they the safe option. Sometimes she had a huge impact, like Nikki Haley in South Carolina. Sometimes the candidates she backed fell short and fell quite short, like Vaughn Ward, who was running for Congress out in Idaho. And sometimes she even alienated, I suspect, some of her followers. I mean, she picked Carly Fiorina over Chuck DeVore in California's Senate primary. And there were a lot of Chuck DeVore followers who were big Sarah Palin fans who were just shocked and disagreed quite strongly with that pick. I went back and checked. In the end, 33 of her picks won, 21 of them lost, and 10 of them lost in the primary. And that's what happens when you don't play it safe. You don't necessarily always pick the candidate who's most going to, who's guaranteed to win or most likely to win. And I think that it was very clear in her picks. But of those 33, obviously a whole bunch of, you know, members of the House, members of the Senate, you know, names and governors and names big and small. You got to figure at the very least, you know, 25 and maybe even all 33 would back her in a presidential primary if she decides to run. And that's going to be everybody from, you know, Renee Elmers to Pat Toomey to obviously clear names like John McCain, but, you know, Nikki Haley, which probably is going to carry a lot of weight in South Carolina. So I think a very high upside. I think a little bit of downside when some of her picks didn't pan out so well. But I think that was a very bold way of approaching what is usually a very predictable game of candidate endorsements.
Jim, great minds think almost alike. I took Jim DeMint on this one because only did he buck the system and the incumbents, he had to work with them at the same time he was hoping that they would lose. So this was not exactly the most convenient, most comfortable situation for DeMint. We'll see how much power he wields with the Republicans getting more power. A lot of people think he's the de facto leader of the party. I think that's a little bit of a stretch in the Senate, but clearly he was out front as the symbol of the Tea Party in terms of incumbent senators. And in some cases, just like you said with Palin, it paid off. In other cases, it certainly did not. But certainly distinguished himself by putting him out there and again, attracting the ire of folks within his own party and some who used to be. I'm sure Arlen Specter's farewell screed on the Senate floor was partly directed towards Jim DeMint.
A very solid pick, Greg. And it's interesting you mention whether the notion that Jim DeMint is the real leader in the Senate. I think what's interesting is whenever any major issue comes up, people want to know, what does Jim DeMint think? Is he going to sign on to this, or is he going to object to it, or what's his stance on this? So once you reach that state, you are a leader. You are setting the tone. You are kind of setting the terms of debate. You are setting the, you know, and when Jim DeMint makes his decision, there are probably a bunch of folks who are going to take that decision into their own decision-making process. So I think that's, you know, even if you don't necessarily have the title of, you know, Senate Minority Leader, you can begin exercising leadership even without a title. So that's an interesting trend to watch in the year to come.
Absolutely. And another trend that will continue are our holiday awards, the Christmas and New Year's awards for all the different achievements and lack of achievements from the year 2010 in politics. More to come on tomorrow's edition of the 3 Martini Lunch. Please join us then.